You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Casino, America's social casino.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, welcome to Pod on the Tyne. I'm Taylor Payne, rounding up the week in Newcastle United-related shenanigans a little later than usual because of the Champions League game last night. I've got Chris Woff with me and George Coggan. Chris, how are you doing? You all right?
Yes, I have changed my trousers and my attire from yesterday.
You've changed your attitude as well while you're on.
If nobody's listened to the Extra Time episode, no one's got any context for that, and it just sounds like you've made a mess of yourself.
Well, I mean, I did make a mess of myself.
Yeah, but like I said, you kind of fell on your sword, as it were, your kind of slobbery gravy sword outside St. James's Park. But yeah, and I did want to save it up for this pod, so it had the wider audience. But yeah, Chris managed to spill his entire pretty much dinner across his trousers in spectacular fine style before the match. Didn't feel like a kind of great omen for what lay ahead, but thankfully it was not contagious.
I'm going to give it a context. It's basically in Newcastle United, where the press conferences are post game in the media room. They have changed now, so there are almost like sort of church pews which have little foldy out desks that come out, which are not deep enough to put a laptop on, and they're certainly not deep enough to have a dinner plate on. So I give myself a little bit of an out that I think it was inevitable this was going to happen. Probably was inevitable it was going to happen to me. But then to try and mitigate against me doing it again afterwards, the dinner was a roast chicken dinner, and it was like a roast chicken breast. I decided to then try and eat just stick my fork into the chicken breast and then try and like chomp into it.
He speared an entire chicken breast onto the end of his fork and just kind of stooped, bent over his own soiled trousers.
Good Lord.
And the plate, and started sort of chewing on it really mournfully. And it was a desperately unattractive vision. And I just thought, like, one more bad thing happens, we're just going to be suddenly in the land of cavemen. You know, there'll be no social filters left anymore. It's very disappointing.
It's awful. Can I ask, please, that nobody ever say the word slobbery gravy sword to me ever again?
Sorry.
Because I don't need to hear that. That's disgraceful. Thank you.
On a completely unrelated subject, you probably weren't going to ask me how I was. I want to give a shout out to my mate Falco from the band McCluskey, who I saw in the Clooney last Friday night. Absolutely rocked the Clooney. I've had a relationship with him for a while on social media, online and stuff like that. We've chatted a fair bit, but not met up with him, but had a pint with him before and after the gig. What a fantastic gig and what a great fella he is. So if you're listening, thank you for doing that. Come back and see us soon, and thank you for a wonderful evening.
I like how you explained what social media was there as well, though. Yeah, like your online social media.
Is that what
like
I said?
Online, right? Yeah.
Okay.
As opposed to regular social media, which is just talking to people in the street.
For 24 hours, Chris, I'm not taking any shit off you. You can't eat a roast dinner without wearing nappies.
So check out McCluskey, and also check out our Extra Tine episode that we recorded at Benfica last night. Podonthetine.supportandcast.fm to sign up and subscribe and get access to that excellent episode of the show. We did get an email as well along those lines, and just want to say I'm pleased I subscribed to the extra content. Really enjoying these episodes. Hope Chris managed to get the gravy stains out of his trousers. Keep up the good work. Two and two, and kind regards, Louise. There you go, Louise.
Thank you, Louise.
Very much for that. Right then, chaps, let's get into it. Headlines, 30 seconds or less. George, let's start with you. Becky Langley dismissed by Newcastle United Women.
Yeah, a pretty ruthless decision, it has to be said, by Newcastle, dispensing with the services of Becky 6 years after she took the job. We are going to dive into this at great length, or at some length anyway, very shortly. But 6 years on, after two consecutive promotions, moving club to a full-time status and doing lots and lots of good things behind the scenes, Becky is gone. We don't have any more information yet about who'll be following her, but a sad moment for the club.
Wingers torment Benfica in the Champions League, Chris.
Yes, Newcastle United 3, Benfica 0. Two goals for Harvey Barnes, followed on from Anthony Gordon. A wonderful assist from Nick Pope, launching the ball from his own penalty area into the opposition half. And generally, just a really strong performance. Anthony Gordon's best performance of the season, best performance in a long while. Harvey Barnes getting two off the bench, hopefully good for his confidence. And now it's about translating that into the Premier League. Newcastle are in a strong position in the Champions League. You can hear more about that, as we've already said, on our Support and Cast episode.
And Sandro Tonali's secret contract extension, George.
Yes, so this is something that mainly Chris, but also I have written about in The Athletic, that contrary to what has been reported in public before, Tonali actually signed a contract extension at the same time as his ban was in place. He took a pay cut at the same time, which basically just means that the club have more protection than was previously thought. Obviously, Tonali is a wonderful footballer, and there's been a bit of angst about him following the departure of Alexander Isak. More to follow on this too.
Right then, chaps, let's get into it. And we'll start with Becky Langley, George. Newcastle Women, they've had a tough start, haven't they, this season? And despite a very creditable 3-3 draw with Man City in the League Cup on Sunday, news came through early this week that Becky Langley, the inspirational coach who nursed the team into the professional era before securing back-to-back promotions, has been dismissed.
Yeah, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. I'm... Naturally, I think it's okay to feel sad and to feel sort of disappointed about this, in the sense that, you know, Becky has been a hugely inspirational and transformative figure for Newcastle United Women. Here 6 years ago, when she was pretty much doing everything at the club, leading the team, following the takeover into a fully professional, full-time era, to back-to-back promotions, incredibly difficult thing to do, and then stabilising them in WSL2 last season. Things have not gone the way the team would have liked this season so far. Albeit it's still pretty early days. We'll talk about that a bit more in some detail. But yeah, I have to be honest, sort of a little bit, you know, sort of disappointed about the club's statement talking about Becky's departure, just because it was so brief. I do think she, you know, she deserved a bit more than that. You know, there were no quotes. There was no quotes from anybody at the club in that statement. She deserved, I think, a bit more of a tribute and a bit more of a send-off. You know, not that there was anything wrong in the statement per se, but, you know, she has been at the helm for an incredibly important time. Anyway, I caught up with Amanda Staverley earlier on today, the former part owner of the club, who was, you know, part of that, real, you know, those real three pillars of the women's team, her, Becky and Sue Cumming, the former head of football, who was also left. And I wanted to get her reaction, not in terms of the news itself about Becky leaving, but to pay, yeah, a real tribute to the work that Becky has put into the team.
I think the first thing for me to say is, look, it was the greatest privilege for me to have the chance to work with such a talented and inspirational woman. I mean, she's a top-class coach. She was incredible. She taught me a great deal about leadership. She taught me about never giving up on your goals. She is, and you will know this, incredibly hardworking, tremendously hardworking. And, you know, moving up through multiple leagues is seriously tough. Women's football is really hard because you've got, at the lower leagues, you've got, you know, you've got this very narrow funnel, and getting through it is tough, and then being relegated down is tough. We had so little resources at play, and what she achieved for Newcastle, for women's football, for us, for the board, for Newcastle, was not just appreciated, it changed the face of women's sport for me in the northeast of England.
People do tend to kind of forget, or you kind of move on very quickly, but this has been a kind of lifelong passion for you, and it was something that you always had your eye on at Newcastle, something that was always kind of massively part of the plan. But can you just explain a little bit what it was you kind of walked into at Newcastle in terms of the women's team and what Becky was doing? Because in those early days, she was literally doing everything, wasn't she? I mean, she was managing the team. She was juggling another full-time job. She was washing the kits.
I remember seeing her wash the kit. And I remember thinking, God, you know, years later, well, at least you're not having to wash the kit tonight. But but she probably missed that. No, she was doing absolutely everything. And when we started, we didn't have a team. She was, you know, she had another full-time job. She was so talented, and I could see she, you know, obviously her passion for football, but she's also an incredibly, you know, great coach. And you could see that from day one. We know we had to put the team together. The girls had been used to, you know, paying their own for their own kit, not only paying for their own kit, but actually paying for the privilege to play. So, you know, girls were having to get together, you know, at 8, 9 o'clock at night sometimes, just so that people could have a kick around. And so it was so important to us to be able to build a women's football team together. And then eventually, obviously, the club, you know, that team went professional. So it was a huge source of pride for me, and especially an example that we could share with my family, and Murdad and Alexander learnt so much from that.
Obviously, the club was suddenly kind of given resource, and it had a kind of, the women's team had an incredible advocate in you. It's one thing sort of having the ambition and the resource, it's another actually delivering. And as you said, those promotions, I mean, it's so brutal, the women's game, in the sense it was one team goes up and that's it.
One down, yeah.
And she, you know, to deliver back-to-back promotions in that way was incredibly impressive, wasn't it?
Not just impressive, extraordinary. You know, we were so proud of her and still am today. I mean, I, you know, her legacy will live on, and that's why I actually spoke to her and said, this is your legacy.
Yeah.
I said, you've got to remember we started, and Sue Cumming also, Cummings, we owe a great deal to as well. But Becky inspired me to do this before we actually bought the club. It was so early stage, and you know, I'm incredibly proud of her. I'm sure, you know, anybody that's worked with her, you should talk to any of her teammates and any of her women, and they, you know, she's so not just, you know, she led by example. She was always the hardest working. She expected a lot of her team, but they also got so much from her. So I think I found that I learned a lot about women's football. And there are significant differences, and people forget that it's you know, it's a tough league.
You miss it, don't you?
Yeah, of course. I miss the, you know, yes, I'm quite emotional now thinking about, you know, but she deserves so much praise from everybody, from the community. She really did so much for all of us. I miss her anyway. I don't see her as often, but I did talk to her the other night and just thanked her for everything that she'd done for me. And she gave me a sense of, sorry, I'm getting emotional. And let me just row that back a bit. I think one of the difficulties we had initially was it was so tough that I don't think anybody will appreciate, probably for a number of years, just how hard that journey was.
Yeah.
But all of the women and the young and the fantastic men that also work at the club. But as a legacy, I just love working with her, and I know that whoever works with her in the future is just going to find a very hardworking, professional, brilliant, inspirational coach. And I know that, you know, Newcastle will miss her enormously. And she has, you know, whoever steps into her shoes, you know, they have very big shoes to fill. And that will be no doubt a quite a daunting, you know, position, because she's just been such a tremendous asset to the whole of the Newcastle community.
The final thing I'd kind of like to say is that obviously I was there at the game on Sunday, and Newcastle got a fantastic result against Manchester City, a big team in the WSL and the kind of, you know, team and club that Newcastle sort of want to emulate. Obviously, that's one part of her legacy, the fact that Newcastle are now a competitive team, you know, pushing, wanting to get to that highest level, and now kind of within touching distance. But the other side of it is seeing 3,000 people in that stadium, a lot of young women, a lot of girls. The fact that there's a pathway open to women, to girls in the Northeast, in Newcastle, not only to play football, but to participate, to watch, seeing people get really, really excited about those wonderful footballers on the pitch. That is every bit as important a legacy for you as well as Becky, as anything that's happened around the men's team. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing that's been created there. And I know you are very proud of that. But could you just talk a little bit about that as well? Because a generation of women and girls now have an opportunity that you weren't given as a kid.
I think what I love about football today, and women's football is going to grow at such a rate, you will see, especially in the next 2-3 years. And what I love is that, you know, young men will watch women's football and enjoy actually watching it, possibly more than men's, but especially for young people, because it's slightly slower. And so I know that sounds, but you can see the footwork, you can see the incredible skill and talent of each player. And sometimes the men's game moves so quickly, so that for spectators and people actually learning about the game, I think that Lexi and a lot of my friends' kids learn more from women's football than they do from men's.
Interesting.
And I think the difficulty has always been, you know, the commercial rights have never been sufficiently strong enough to enable the women's game to grow. That's going to catch up. And I also think that the sense of community around women's football is so great. And that's so important. The wonderful Newcastle fans really embrace Becky and the women. And those, you know, and every game, I was just so grateful for that support. And I think to get the best out of women's football, we all have to really work together. And that's, you know, making sure that, you know, to get a game on, remember, it's not about just getting the game on the day. It's where do the coaches train? Where do the women train? Are they in the men's team or are they separate? How do you fund that? I think what we'll find is there'll be much more resource around women's football at that level, at that slightly lower grassroots level. And that will mean that the women's football is more and more competitive. I know a friend of mine sent me a text the other day and he said, I've just been at one of the women's games and it was at a very, very senior game, a high level game. And he said, I've never seen anything that extraordinary. That, you know, women's football is going to be, it will equal men's. But what it does that is separate to the men's game is that it does have a very big sense of community that sometimes we lack when in the men's game. You know, yes, and I think that's important to recognise and embrace. And I think that's great for rights holders and sponsors because it's a very different feeling going to a women's game. But the level of football has just got better and better and better. And that's what Becky did. We started from the very basics of trying to pull a team together and making sure that team was fit. And, you know, with women, I remember, you know, a couple of girls getting ACL injuries and not being able to play and just being able to give someone an operation to be able to fix their knee. Ordinarily, yes, you'd get it in the men's game, but you wouldn't get that resource in the women's game. I'm excited about the future for Newcastle women because we had this incredibly inspirational young lady who came and founded this team. You know, she put this together with Sue and there was some great support around her, but, you know, I would never have had the ability to give this opportunity to the Newcastle community had she not done what she did. And I owe her so much. We all do. And she did it with real integrity. And it is hard. The one thing you will learn about football, it's very brutal and difficult decisions sometimes have to be made. You know, I know people have been lobbying for a different structure in the lower leagues, but it is very hard. Promotion is hard. And so, you know, I would like to just say thank you to her and to the Newcastle community for giving her such support.
This is the harsh reality, really, of where the team is at the moment and where it's trying to go and the speed that it's trying to get there, George, as well, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, I think that's very much the message from within the club is simply they are not where they want to be or where they expect to be. Now, they did have those two promotions, back-to-back promotions. The club has had a lot of resource put into it. It's had a lot of investment put into it. You know, I think a bit like, you know, we talked about Howe and the men's team post takeover and escaping from relegation is kind of glossed over a little bit in terms of, you know, how important that moment was and, you know, how difficult it was, how far Newcastle were adrift in that example. Yes, Newcastle women's team had investment put behind it. But to get out of those divisions when there's only one promotion place, really incredibly difficult. And they did it, and they did two in a row. And yeah, last season, it was a learning curve for everybody. You had a lot of people at the club, including Becky, who'd not managed that level before. I think they acquitted themselves really well. There's been another big wave of investment over this summer. There's been another sort of wave of change. And I think the feeling is that this just isn't where they want to be. It is slightly different this season, as we've talked about a lot. There are two automatic promotion places this season, plus a half, in the sense that there's going to be a playoff between the next team, the third place team, and team from the WSL. So it's a big, big opportunity, and they feel that they're not in the right place at this moment in time. It's an international break now, so they have a bit of time to decide what they want to come next. But it is a ruthless decision. I think that is the way of putting it. Whether it's, you know, whether it's the right decision, we'll find out. We'll find out soon enough, won't we?
Chris, this is a big call from Ross Wilson and Grace Williams, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much Ross Wilson has had to do with it. He's only been there sort of 10 days or so, and I don't think that it was sort of ultimately his call. I think he was led by others who were already there. Grace Williams arrived from Crystal Palace in the summer as the club's first sort of full-time professional sporting director moving forward on the women's side. Clearly, she feels that there needs to be a change of direction. I understand that. I agree with George, though. It did feel rather brutal, it did feel like there could have been at least more, a little bit more compassion shown in the statement that's released, and also just reflecting on what Becky has achieved. And I'd like to think the club might address that sort of going forward. But fascinated to see where they go next in that regard. Who do they turn to? What are they exactly? Are they looking for in their next women's head coach? Is it someone who plays a similar style? Do they think that they need someone who's shown that they can get promotion before? Is it someone who's got experience in the actual WSL, which is where they want to be? Is it a European experience? I generally don't know, and it'll be very intriguing to see where they do go with it, because, yeah, they've got big shoes to follow in terms of the achievements that Becky Langley had during her time.
Funnily enough, it's something that I talked to Becky about after the Man City game. And, you know, I went to that match. It was a really good occasion. Newcastle were the better team, I thought, in the first half, and, you know, then had a tough spell against a team that are second in the WSL at the minute. You know, really, really good side. The kind of club that Newcastle want to be, but they show great resilience to kind of come back into it. But I asked kind of Becky about this idea of pressure. There has been such a feel-good factor around the women's team post takeover, and it's been one of those stories. I don't want to sort of say stories of naivety, but it's been like sort of open mouth, like, oh wow, this is so good, this is amazing, it's brilliant. And they've gone up, they've had this incredible ambition, and they've had this incredible investment as well, but there's been a really, you know, light-hearted almost feeling around the team. Now I think that changed this summer, and it changed because there was another big summer of change. Sue Cummings left. They brought in a new director of football. They went big again in terms of getting rid of people who've had a long association with the club. People, you know, that we've interviewed and talked to, like Katie Barker, Grace Donnelly, you know, and our friend Amber Keegan-Stobbs, who've been around a bit less time, but, you know, Newcastle fan, and really, you know, kind of really important figures in the club. And they've brought in England internationals. They brought in USA internationals. And, you know, I think there's kind of like that loss of innocence. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. There's almost a loss of innocence, and this is in keeping with it. But, you know, I think that's kind of fine. That's, you know, that's where they want to be. That's where they want to go. You know, if you win all the time, suddenly winning feels kind of less magical and more just what you expect. I think they've got to that point. And so there is a logic to this in those terms. It just sets a very high bar in terms of ruthlessness and ambition, and it's kind of basically saying no, it's like, you know, we expect to be in the WSL next season, and this is how we're going to get there. But they've put pressure on themselves with this decision, there's no doubt about that, because there was no, apart from the odd thing you might read on you know, on social media, Becky's name got a huge cheer at the weekend. There was great support for her still, and, you know, there will always be massive respect for what she's achieved.
The thing I said to the players was that, you know, winning is not always the only measure of success. We've had a lot of success emerging from a part-time to a full-time programme, navigating lots of challenges and obstacles along the way. And the people that these players are, I'm just so proud of them. The way the staff and the players have supported me this week has just been phenomenal. So, yeah, I can't thank them anymore.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino.
America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Right then, chaps, let's move on. Sandro Tonali's contract after the end of the summer. Newcastle fans have been a bit on edge, haven't they, about high-status players within the squad if they've got less than 7 years left on their contracts. And maybe not quite that, but there has been some consternation, especially with regard to Sandro Tonali, our midfield maestro from Milano. Fear not. Why, Chris?
I mean, fear not might be a bit of a stretch, but basically Newcastle are in a far stronger position than was previously known. Sandro Tonali signed in 2023 from AC Milan, initially on a 5-year contract, which would have taken him through till 2028. So the assumption was that at the end of this season, he'd only have 2 years left on his deal. But actually, 2 years ago, basically at the point that his ban was being confirmed, his 10-month ban for gambling offences, he voluntarily came and offered to take a pay cut, which was something we already knew about. But this, what we didn't know was that at the same time what Newcastle did and that Tonali was delighted to do himself was extend that contract by a year. It was almost like, well, you're missing out on the best part of a year of football. Here's another year on top of that. Then so that takes us to 2029. Then beyond that, our understanding is that Newcastle also have the option of another 12-month clause, which they can unilaterally enact. So essentially, they have Sandro Tonali tied down until the end of the 2030 season, if they want to keep him for that long. So,
and then he what happened with your voice there, Chris? It went very strange.
bit of stray gravy still lingering around there.
So, till the end of the 2030 season, which is very positive news because it means that there was a lot of talk that Ross Wilson coming in as sporting director, one of the first things that he needed to address was Sandro Tonali's contract, make sure he gets an extension, because don't want a repeat of the Alexander Isak situation. Now, I don't think it necessarily boxes that off completely. What it does mean is that Newcastle are in a stronger position. They have him tied down for longer, so it's not quite as pressing a need. It also means if someone was to come and try and prize him away from Newcastle, they could say we have him till 2030, you're going to have to pay us more money to do so. Wage-wise, he's among Newcastle's highest earners, but that still doesn't mean he's going to earn as much as he could if he necessarily went to one of the elite clubs across Europe. So it doesn't entirely close off that sort of question mark over him, but it certainly puts Newcastle in a far stronger position than we previously knew. It's not quite as pressing an issue, and it's just really a good news story. Very strange that it's been sort of like secret for 2 years, but I suppose Nick Pope was similar, that Nick Pope had another year in his contract. Newcastle tend to do this. There's been quite a few extensions or clauses which tend to happen, but for Sandro Tonali, it's a very positive extension and something which hopefully reassures Newcastle fans to a certain degree.
That's quite funny you mentioned Nick Pope. I was at his press conference on Monday evening at St James's Park, and he was put up by the club pre Benfica, and he was actually asked about this contract because that had just become known. It was like, well, that was nice news, and he said, well, yeah, it was, you know, that was good for me, that was good news for me, that was exciting for me 2 years ago when it actually happened. And it was like,
yeah,
it's just kind of
the second time this has happened, isn't it? Dan Byrne had a sneaky contract extension that nobody knew about either.
Yeah, well, third if you include Pope and Tonali as well. I mean, that, you know, Chris has made this point before, and it's a very good one. You know, Tonali's own personal circumstances make this quite a tricky one to sort of get your head around, because of course he has had that long ban. You know, that still lingers in the background. You know, he is sensational. He has been absolutely wonderful for Newcastle since he came back into the team. And of course, as fans, you feel a level of angst after what's happened to Isak. You know, you don't want to see a repetition of that. And, you know, God, he's so good. But his position does make it more complicated. What does that mean for a fee, for a potential fee? Would Newcastle, you know, accept any fee that could be given to, you know, does that reflect? So, but, you know, this is good news, and I think it's good that it's come out now. Tonali's attitude is kind of laid back. He's been a great player for Newcastle. They love his attitude. We spoke to a lot of people around the club at the time and who were still there talking about him, saying that, you know, he wanted to take this reduction in wages. That was something that he was very proactive about. You know, same with this contract, feeling the need to repay the team for standing by him. Let's hope he's here for the duration of his contract. Let's hope he's here for a long, long time to come.
It won't stop fans from being worried, though, Chris, will it? Sven Botman was another name that was mentioned last week. Is there anyone else that Newcastle are looking at contracts for?
Well, Sven Botman is the crucial one and the one that really needs to be addressed in terms of time dependent for someone who's not a real senior player. I mean, Kieran Trippier isn't in the last year of his contract, Fabian Schär as well. But Sven Botman will enter the last 18 months of his deal going into the new year. And given the form that he's shown so far over the course of the last 6 weeks or so, he looks like he's getting back towards the best that he showed in the 2022-23 campaign, and he is top class. So that's definitely one to look to be addressed. There was interest from Bayer Leverkusen over the summer. Tino Livramento is another one. A lot of belief that he needs to be given a sort of bump in status really within the squad, given how important he is, and look to address that. Slightly more complicated. We know there's been lingering Man City interest from elsewhere longer term, but Botman is, I think, is very much the priority, and if they can get him tied down, I think that will be a huge boost, because the relationship he's shown with Malik Chow so far, if you were to have those two tied down alongside having Dan Byrne and Fabian Schär going forward as your centre-back pairings for the next couple of years, I think Newcastle are in a very strong position defensively.
And Chris, you wrote about Suds this week as well, didn't you? I imagine you're not going to try and pronounce his full name yet again, but his appointment as technical director was a directive from PIF down and a new kind of data-driven approach.
Yeah, so with it being Benfica, which was the first football club that Suds, Sudarshan Godapalisekan, I think.
Good effort, Chris.
It wasn't. The first name was a decent effort, but that's the easier one to say. He started in working in football at Benfica, having moved across from Microsoft. He was a mathematics graduate. He's from the US, but of South Indian heritage. His family are from there, and he's sort of the quote unquote whiz kid in data as would be described. And he then moved across to Atalanta in Italy, and was then Newcastle. Basically, it took them almost a year to appoint him, which it's almost like Groundhog Day there, isn't it?
Sounds like
any
us,
senior
it?
appointment at Newcastle United takes a heck of a long time. So it was during Paul Mitchell's period as sporting director that Suds was targeted, and then it actually was after Paul Mitchell left that he came in. He only actually met Paul Mitchell once in person, and it was partly PIF who'd really driven it. They believe that the real area of growth for Newcastle moving forward is data across the club. And so he has an unusual title of technical director, in the sense that technical director on the continent often is almost like a sporting director, someone who's involved in like the negotiation of transfers, leads almost a sporting operation. That's not where he is. He's not. He is below Ross Wilson in terms of rank, but he came in at a point where there wasn't someone there wasn't a CEO either, and so it's the way that it's described by some people at the club is he's almost like the purest form of technical director. He's about safeguarding the medium and long-term decisions at the club, and also sort of looking at trying to add objectivity as much as you can through the use of data and sort of more sort of scientific approach to things, not just in recruitment, although that'll be a heavy part of it, but across all areas: rehabilitation, sports science, recovery, where players should go on loan, the clubs that maybe Newcastle would partner with if they were to go into a sort of multi-club model is the suggestion that they may going forward. And so it's a very important appointment, something that PIF really have driven, and it'll be interesting to see going forward how that works and what sort of influence he has, what relationships he has to build within the club, because he not only is the technical director position unusual, he is an unusual appointment in terms of an unorthodox route into football. He hasn't graduated in terms of come through on the footballing side. He's from the mathematics side, then come into football. Very interesting moving forward, very important role, something that PIF are putting a lot of cachet into, and hopefully it proves to be successful and helps grow Newcastle. Just another position that they've added to the sort of senior team at the club.
And you were also, Chris, at Whitley Park on Tuesday for the UEFA Youth League Cup tie as well. Wasn't a great night, was it?
No, so Newcastle have played three, lost three in that competition, the under-19s. Benfica won 5-1. First half, it was actually a very even match. Newcastle missed a couple of big opportunities, but second half, once they conceded a second goal, fell apart really. Could have been several more. Got a late consolation through Joe Brayson, who you may recognise the surname, Taylor, of a certain age.
Paul Brayson?
Paul Brayson, yes. He used to play for Newcastle. And yeah, it's been a difficult competition for the under 19 so far. Newcastle have a very young team, very inexperienced side in many ways. And yeah, I spoke to Adam Lawrence, who arrived last month. He runs both the under 21s and the under 19s as is in this competition, and spoke to him about the sort of the youth league campaign so far, hopes going forward, and really what can be learned from this and how the players can grow given this experience.
At half-time, we thought the game was fairly even in terms of us being in the game, having some good opportunities, particularly in the middle of the half. Obviously, they're a good side as well, and they carry a threat. But I felt from the second goal onwards, we were too open, not disciplined enough, and ultimately didn't find a way to stay in the game. From then on, obviously, the goals went in, and you know, we found it tough to stay within the game and just try and find a way to stay in it. So again, listen, credit to them, and you know, in ultimately they've given us a lesson today, and we weren't able to, I guess, sustain and try and build on the first half performance where, listen, up until the 2-0 game, we felt we was competitive and carried a threat as well. So that was a disappointing bit.
You mentioned the chances. There was also a big chance at the start of the second half for Sean Neave. It's sort of those moments at this level, if you don't capitalise on them, then sides of this good will punish you, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, we're playing against the best in Europe. So that's, I think if you looked across the whole game, we've probably had 7 or 8 decent chances. But we've also given up some easy chances and opportunities for them. And good players will take them, and then they get momentum, and then they get their towels up. We become a little bit ill-disciplined, and then the game and the golf becomes bigger than what it should look like, where really we should lose the game today, but it'd be more respectable in terms of how we manage the second half and the last periods of the game. But we let it get too far away from us, and that's obviously what good sides do.
And what was your sort of message to the players afterwards? I mean, do you have to lift them after that? Well, how do you sort of handle it for a group of that age?
Yeah, I think, listen, our biggest challenge, there's been loads of good since I've come in a lot of the games. The games where we've come up against opposition, maybe with that next level of quality. Thinking Chelsea game before I started that I watched, the Tottenham game, this game today. It's like when you're playing against that next level of opponent, that next level of, you know, competitiveness, game savvy, understanding moments in periods of the game is what ultimately has let the opposition get away from us, you know. So maybe other opposition that you play against, you don't get punished in the same way. When we're playing against these types of teams, you do get punished. So if you're giving up opportunities and you're becoming too open and too ill-disciplined, these players are going to punish you. Like I said, across the game, we've probably had 7-8 chances. We might have scored a few goals ourselves, but the manner that we've conceded some of the goals in the second half and, you know, not being competitive enough and savvy enough in those moments is the biggest disappointment.
3 games, 3 defeats in this competition. It looks like it might be difficult to progress in it. But how do you view the final 3 games of it?
Yeah, listen, every game gives you, you know, I thought the Barcelona game was a bit of a crazy game in terms of us bringing it back to 3-2, then feeling like ultimately we could have got something from it. The game in USG was different, where we have a lot of the ball. We create good enough chances across the game, but obviously don't score, and we get undone from a counter-attacking moment and a set piece. So it's like them moments again. And then obviously today's been, you know, I thought in terms of some of the individuals and then the physicality of their players that, the you know, that can make a difference, you know, we struggled with that today. So I think if you looked at each individual game, there's been periods of the game or parts where we've been at the level, and then there's been parts in each game that we've been undone with or we fell short. So each game obviously gives you a different set of problems, so we just have to obviously go into the next game first of all focusing on the process and the details of what we're talking about and being better in those moments. But listen, ultimately, you know, Robbie was spot on in the change room there. We're playing against some of the best players and the best teams in Europe, and we want to push and do better in those individual games in terms of performance and results-wise. So obviously up to us to help the players and the players to be fully aware of what's to come in those games.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
So, as mentioned at the top, we did a Champions League matchday podcast on Tuesday night as Newcastle eventually made light work of Jose Mourinho's Benfica. The wingers were cited by Jose as our big strength on the night. They all played a part, but George Anthony Gordon was particularly bright, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that continues his form in the Champions League so far this season. He scored in every match so far, as we talked about, and you know, he becomes the first Newcastle player to do that in consecutive Champions League games. So, you know, like, really good, really encouraging. And yeah, as you say, Jose talked about Newcastle's horsepower. That was the story of the night. I mean, it was one of the stories of the night in the sense of where Newcastle's sort of attacking threat came from. Jacob Murphy was excellent, I thought, on the right, put in an assist. Barnes comes on, scores twice. The problem, as we all know, is that this has just not been replicated in the Premier League. Certainly if you're talking about Gordon, Barnes and Anthony Elanga, no goals, no assists, that's a big problem. For the way Newcastle want to play, with a forward in Nick Waltimada, who, you know, looks really, really good, offers great quality. We saw some examples of that against Benfica. I mean, just some magical moments, but it puts a lot of pressure on the wingers, on the fullbacks, to get into the game, to get forward, to get into these dangerous positions and to contribute. And in the Premier League, it just hasn't happened enough. They have to find a way. They have to find a way of making it work. As I say, you saw great signs of the team that Newcastle can be and want to be against Benfica. But it has to happen in league games as well. They're 14th in the table. You know, they need a win against Fulham, I think. I'm not saying that in a horrible way, in a kind of like pressurised way, but they have to find some consistency in the league too.
Earlier on today, I went on to Discord, which I'm learning about, and this is to chat with subscribers who do subscribe, just sort of asked, what did you make of the game last night? What are your sort of talking points moving forward? And Foyce, is that how you pronounce someone whose name on it is P-H-O-C-E? I don't know, Foyce?
Anyway,
that's what I'm going to go with.
You did such a great job with suds, Chris, that, you know, we trust your pronouncement.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He said last night Gordon beat his man on the outside numerous times. One defender popped his groin trying to keep up. He also drifted in the middle a lot more. Felt like his best game, with a bit of freedom in his play and far more variety. Want to see more of that going forward. Question is that a one-off or a glimpse of things to come? And
yeah,
that is very... I mean, I spoke to Anthony Gordon after the game. You could hear the extended version of it on the subscriber pod, but there's going to be a bit that I'm going to talk about now, which we can hear a clip from in a second, where he spoke about the relationship he's developing with Nick Waltimada. We've spoken about the way that Newcastle need to sort of evolve in attack. Waltimada only had one touch in the opposition box against Benfica. There was a lovely flick back for Harvey Barnes' second goal in the build-up to that, to Anthony Gordon to then lay him on, and that showed the link-up play there, and that relationship's really starting to build. But Waltimada is not someone who gets in the box loads. He only had one effort on goal against Benfica, and so for that reason, A, he needs to get in the box more, B, players need to get around him, they need to get beyond him.
Yeah, I was very unsure like of his game style when he first came in, how it would translate for me, but it's been unbelievable, I'll be honest. I didn't think it'd be as good as it has turned out to be. He suits my game so well. You see the little passes I do around the corner, that's my style of play as a winger. And not a lot of attackers can really play off that style, but it's some of his first touches and his little flicks, especially for the third goal, like, that's top level.
You see with Gordon, I think you've seen it quite a lot this season. He's tried to come inside. Mode hasn't necessarily worked as much as it did against Benfica. But yes, you could see that it was clear that they knew, whether this was analysis from the coaches or whether Gordon just felt it early on, that he had Dedic on the outside. And so to go down the left, to cross in on the left-hand side, and it just makes him more unpredictable. We know he can cut inside and shoot with his right foot, but I think he became, towards the back end last season, you sort of knew that's what he was going to do quite often, and it was almost like that's what he reverts to type to do because that's what he's confident with.
The team selection should be interesting, George, for Fulham, shouldn't it? Harvey Barnes obviously comes on, grabs himself two goals, a decent display. Jacob Murphy gets an assist as well, a good display from him. Who do you start? Who do you bench? I personally like Barnes coming off the bench. He seems to come off the bench a little bit angry and a bit hungry and looking for those opportunities. And I like Jacob Murphy putting the balls in with his right foot. But what would you do?
Well, yeah, and of course there's a longer too. So you know, that's what you want. You want your squad to be full of people desperate to come on, as you say, angry, coming on angry. Newcastle haven't had enough of that throughout the whole squad. It's also very interesting in the centre of midfield, where Miley was excellent again. You know, picking up from where he left off against Brighton, he was definitely a bright spark there, and you know, a really good performance.
We have to remember that Lewis Miley's still only 19. We have to remember that.
Yeah,
the maturity levels he's shown sometimes when he plays in those big games is just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you know, it wasn't too long ago that we're talking about Newcastle's midfield as being the best in the Premier League, and we're talking about Joe Linton, we're talking about Bruno and Sandro Tonali. I mean, they are astonishingly good players, but you don't want it to be a closed shop. You want,
of course.
You know, you want these players to feel that they can force their way in if they play well. Now, against Brighton, that midfield was poor, and so Eddie Howe's got options. He can both give people a rest, as you know, you kind of feel like he did with Joe Linton, who looked like he, you know, looked tired, looked like he needed to come out of the team. And then Tonali has that illness. He was on the bench against Benfica, but these players came in and they acquitted themselves really well, offering something slightly different. So they need to be able to make changes. When you've got three games together like this in close succession in three different competitions, you need to be able to make changes. When you've got this run of seven games together, you need the ability to do it. But you also want those players to feel like they've got a chance, can make an impact, and can make the position their own. That is really important. And so that, to me, is one of the exciting things about the Benfica game, that, you know, no part of the team should be a closed shop.
Right then, chaps, thank you very much for your time. Thanks again to everyone who subscribed to Pod on the Tyne on Support and Cast. Extra Tyne subscribers get an extra show every week. Last week it was a Q&A. This week we had the Champions League matchday show. Next up on Pod on the Tyne, a free-to-air matchday show when we face Fulham on Saturday. Get in touch via email, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X and Blue Sky. And if you are a subscriber, get yourself onto the Discord as well. It's all kicking off on there. Right then, that's it, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
You're very welcome. George and I also had a meeting about a live show which we're going to do in the new year, and so the date for that will be revealed soon, so that's very exciting. Very exciting.
A little
for this
teaser there.
Exactly, a little teaser for you there. So yes, and if you are a subscriber, you will get a short period of time where you get priority for access for that as well. But yeah, very excited to do a first live show as an independent podcast.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much for your time, George.
You are so welcome. Yeah. Champions League.
Always a pleasure.
Good week.
A fabulous week. Fabulous week indeed. Thank you very much to everyone out there for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take it easy and we'll speak to you very soon. Goodbye.
Just means everything. We're so excited and just so buzzing, I think is the only way to describe it, in terms of what it felt like at that final whistle. It was just the excitement, you know, we were there and family and friends were running onto the pitch and the players were, you know, on each other's shoulders and the trophy was there. And yeah, it was just so lovely. There was tears, there was, you know, moments of laughter and joy that'll just last with me forever. So the changing room banter after was brilliant. And yeah, we were just all excited to get back on the bus and start the party.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.com. US for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.